Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. We greatly appreciate it. Raiders reviewers give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think that you're a hater. On the line with us right now, he played this year in the American Flag Football League. The championship game for that league is Thursday night, July 19th in Houston. The game is broadcast on the NFL Network. If you're in Houston, gates open at 6 p.m. Central. Game starts at 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern. That's Team Fighting Cancer versus Godspeed. Godspeed, by the way, is captained by Michael Johnson. But on the line with us is Michael Vick. Now, Mike, how have you enjoyed playing in the AFFL this year?
You know what? I really enjoyed it. Just having the chance to go out and toss the ball around, throw the ball to open receivers, look at a defense, watch guys move was something that I was really accustomed to, and I had a lot of fun doing when I played in the National Football League and in college football. And just to be able to do it again, it brought back a lot of memories where I felt like, you know, I can get out there and play again. And some of the memories that I had, you know, when I played, kind of came back seeing guys come open and seeing defenders checking guys. So it was a great experience, and I had a ton of fun.
Well, it's also got to be a lot more fun doing that without people that can actually hit you, right?
Yeah, that's probably the biggest perk that you get out of it, not having to worry about getting knocked on your butt.
Now, what's the skill level in the league?
I think it's fair. Some of the guys are fresh out. Some of these guys have played 4 or 5 years and, you know, still have a lot of tread and not a lot of wear and tear. So, you know, the guys are moving quick. You know, I felt like, you know, the responses to, you know, several plays and recognition, the instincts were there on the defensive side of the ball. And, you know, guys really came to play. So as long as you approach it with a level of competition, you know, let be the highest mindset, you know, to go out and make it happen. I think it makes for a good competitive game.
Now, how strong is that sense of competition, that spirit?
Just overall, on a scale of 1 to 10, I give it about a 9.5. I mean, like I said, the games were intense. Obviously, when you're playing for a big purse, you know, guys bring a little more to the table. And I felt like that was the case, along with, you know, not being embarrassed or not, you know, letting the guy go out there and annihilate you or make you look bad. I felt like that upped the level of competition.
Now, you talked a bit about some of those guys being fresh out of the league. Like, how do the younger guys respond to meeting you? I mean, because for people of that age, being Michael Vick means something different.
Yeah, it was cool. All the guys paid their respects. I respected them as well for their craft and what they've been through and what they, you know, out there trying to accomplish. But, you know, they really, they look at me as big bro. And, you know, almost as if I paved the way. And this is for guys, you know, who play on the defensive side of the ball or may play receiver. They felt like at some point, you know, in their life, they found themselves on the football field, whether it was in high school or college, you know, trying to imitate something that I may have done. And it's funny how football works, man. You think just being a quarterback, you know, the guys who kept interceptions on defense, you know, when they get the ball in their hands, don't want to imitate a guy. So I think that's really cool, man. You know, guys just showing respect and, you know, being able to be a part, you know, of this with guys like that, it's good. It's a good experience for them.
Now, how many guys have you come across so far that are faster than you?
Not too many, but I tell you what, I was more quick than I was fast. So I know a guy when I see, you know, the fast twitch muscles moving, and especially in their hips, I can tell if they're a fast guy or a quick guy. And it's a big difference. Some guys don't get into their stride. It takes a while. And some guys, you know, just, you know, really, really quick out of their breaks, and then they can just hit it and go. But I haven't ran into too many guys who are faster than me, especially in my prime.
See, I was surprised that you would even admit that there were any of them. Like Joey Galloway, I think to this day is not admitting that anybody is faster than him. He told us once on TV he could still run a 4.3. He might not be able to walk after, but he could still run that 4.3.
He's probably right. I believe it. Joey Galloway was one of the fastest to play in the National Football League.
I guess I'm surprised to hear you say you saw yourself as being more quick than fast, because when you were in the league, you know, you and Randy Moss were probably the two fastest guys that were out there.
Yeah, but if you watch a ton of my highlights, if you watch a lot of them, you will see me break through a crowd of people, get into the open field, have a lead, and there's always somebody who catches me towards the end. And it was like that in the beginning of my career and towards the end. I never really had the long speed. I just had the speed to get away.
Yeah, I grew up rooting for the Falcons, so, like, I'd seen a whole lot of those highlights. I think the catching you from behind part, we seemed to forget because it was like whenever you were going, it was just like, oh, he's gone. And if they catch him, it's like, oh, man, but we'll get him next time.
Yeah, but just the pressure I applied throughout the course of the game on the 7-yard runs, the 9-yard runs, you know, I think at the end of the day, it all accumulated to about, you know, 2 or 3 45-yard runs per game. So, yeah, man, the pressure on the defense was crazy, and I love to apply when I played.
Now, you're talking about those highlights when you were with the Falcons or just throughout your career. Is there any one of them that just really stands out?
Well, obviously the run against Minnesota, because it's always being played. It's always being talked about. All of my fans love that run, and I think it's more about the two guys running into each other at the end, more so than, you know, me just carving through the defense, because they've seen that, you know, over and over and over again. So, yeah, that run always stands out, but it was a run that I had against Denver in 2005 at Mile High Stadium, where I did a spin move that came out of nowhere, and I don't know what happened. My body just did it, and I found myself doing that a lot in my career, having to go back and watch my own highlights and, you know, even in practice and, you know, after a game, going back and watching it, and, you know, it was really, really creative. It was really funny. It was humor to it. And, you know, it was great that so many people had a chance to experience, you know, watching, you know, that part of my game and, you know, being able to deliver, you know, those type of performances, man, it still gives people something to talk about. And we're looking for that, again, in somebody. You know, hopefully, you know, Lamar Jackson can give us those type of highlights. I think he's the next up.
Well, how much do you think about what would have happened if your career had started more in line with these offenses now that are better equipped to, like, use the skills that you have? Like, when you went to Philadelphia, that was my first thought. It's like, what if 22-year-old Michael Vick were playing in this offense with Chip Kelly, for example?
Yeah, it would have been totally different. I feel like I would have did more. But, you know, also knowing that, you know, it's very important to take care of your body. Even playing in Chip's offense in the off season, it was rigorous work, and it was a ton of training, and we had to make sure that we took care of ourselves. And a ton of his messages were to make sure that we're hydrated, make sure we're taking care of our bodies. And if you don't get that message, then you don't know. And when you're young, you feel like you don't have to do as much, you don't have to stretch, you don't have to hydrate. And if I would have had that type of guidance and been able to pay attention to different ways to take care of my body, I felt like, you know, the sky would have been the limit. It was nothing that I probably couldn't accomplish.
Well, when did you realize that you couldn't do what you did when you were younger? Like, it almost sounds like the equivalent, like, when, like, for regular people, you get to that age where you realize you can't eat McDonald's late at night anymore. It's like, oh, I used to be able to do this, but now this isn't going.
Yeah, when I came back, you know, after incarceration and coming to Philadelphia, my body just wasn't the same. I couldn't train the way that I wanted to over the course of those 2 years. And, you know, they took all the weights away from, you know, the system. So, I didn't train the way that I needed to, which was one of my top priorities. Once that happened, I was just kind of, you know, sitting duck, just sitting still, you know, throughout the course of the day. So when I came back, it just took a long time to get in shape. And, you know, it was a tough process, but, you know, I got through it.
So, like, when you look back at your NFL career, like, when do you think for you that it was at its best?
I think the 2010 season in Philadelphia was a year where I really put it all together. And whether it was in the passing game or the run game, I was finding ways to have success on the field, move the chains, and win games. And, you know, when you package it up that way and it all comes together and you can go back and watch it on film and say, you know, this is what we game plan for, this were our intentions going into the game, and this is what we accomplished, and these are the reasons why we won. When you go back and look at it, you look at your preparation and say, I did everything I was supposed to do. And, you know, game plans wasn't easy throughout the course of the week. It wasn't easy. So that year was filled with a ton of satisfaction as far as just making plays and getting guys involved and winning football games.
Now, I guess that Washington game would have been the most satisfying from that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you set the tone from the first play of the game, the way Deshaun did, and then to go on to throw four touchdown passes and rush for two and have six total touchdowns in a Monday night game, when you know the entire world is watching, really says a lot. It speaks volume. And, yeah, that was probably one of my greatest performances of my career.
Well, outside of just the football, how was that season for you? Because I remember you weren't the starter in the first game of the year and then took over during that game and then wound up having the job. But that was also the first time that you'd had the starting job since everything that had happened before. Like, what was it like dealing with everything that came with it that season?
Well, due to some of the mischief that I created, years prior, you know, I got help through the league and I was meeting with a counselor every 2 weeks or it may have been once a week. I can't recollect right now, but immediately after I started the second game of the season, after Kevin Cobb went down, well, it was the week after my first win as the starter, Andy called me into the office and told me that I was going to be the starter for the remainder of the season. Now, mentally, I wasn't prepared for that. I prepared for that one game after Kevin got hurt, came in, beat Detroit. We had Jacksonville in week three, and I just thought I was going back to being the backup. So my mindset was different. It was focused on just being well-prepared like I was in the Green Bay game when I first stepped in when Kevin got hurt. And, he told me I was going to become the starter. Instantly, I called my counselor and like, listen, we need to meet. We need to talk. I need to get mentally prepared for what's to come because I know it's a long journey. And, just having people like that in my corner really helped me, get through that season because, every NFL season for any player, any position is mental. And you have to be mentally strong to get through it. And good thing I had that help. So that was the mindset and I was able to pull through.
You know, it's kind of surprising to hear that you thought you were just going to go to the backup because it seemed that at that time you still saw yourself as a starting quarterback.
I did. And I was just looking forward to being a starter come the 2011 season. I've always thought Kevin Cobb was a really, really good quarterback. I just knew he would hold it down, I would just have to be, a quality backup that season. And if I got a chance to play, go out and play well and still show the league that I still can play. And I did it in the Detroit Lions game, and I thought Kevin Cobb was coming back because it was just, 1 week with a concussion that you had to sit out. So I was caught by, I was taken aback. I was caught off guard, and I'm glad Andy made the decision because it changed my life.
Change your life in what way would you say?
Everything. It was everything I wanted when I got back to playing. I wanted to become a starter again. I wanted to take on that responsibility of leading the team, being a leader, and going out and dominating the game the way I did before I left. And it changed my life dramatically. Things were different. I was in a bankruptcy. My finances weren't where they once were. The next year, I was able to, to be awarded a bigger contract. And that was another sense of comfort. And that decision that he made captivated another dream that I was dreaming. And it was up to me to live it out from that point on. But God made it happen.
What's the relationship you have with Andy now?
That's a great relationship. I can always call Andy. Andy's always helped me out. He's like a father figure to every guy that plays for him. When you're talking about a guy who knows how to share the love and spread the love, that's him. And he always keeps an open line of communication. He's always going to help you if he can. And, he's just a guy that you want in your corner. And like I said, when I say God made it happen for me, I really mean God and Andy made it happen. But, a ton of other people as well, but, that guy, he's special. He's special, and, I tell you, a majority of the people who's been involved in his life will tell you that, it's really, really special to be around Andy Reid, and everyone who comes from under his tree goes on to have a ton of success, and it's evident.
Now, has he asked you for, your insights on, Pat Mahomes, for example?
Kind of, sort of. Well, I've seen Pat last year, so we know what Pat brings to the table. I'm going to go out to Kansas City for 2 days in August and spend some time with Pat and, just talk to him and get him mentally prepared for what's to come. I love, being involved with the younger QBs. If they need advice, if they want to talk, I have to inform them of what they're really about to get into and what the game is really about. You know, that's just passing it on, and I try to, you know, stay in tune with that.
Well, I also imagine, too, that one thing, the similarity, I guess, I see between you coming out of school and him coming out of school is all the talent but not necessarily being so refined, but then you get to a league where talent just isn't enough and how you adjust to that.
Yeah, talent just isn't enough in the National Football League. All components have to come together. It has to start with a great coach who knows how to use you as a player, get the most out of what you can do and bring to the table. And once you cross that hurdle, then it becomes fairly easy. It's all in that quarterback that you're preparing, or any kid in that position, you know, whether it's receiver, defensive back, linebacker, can he mentally prepare and be mentally strong enough to endure, you know, a 16-week season, the ups and downs, the highs and lows, dealing with the media, you know, everything that comes to the forefront. And, you know, it throws curveballs, you know, all year round, you know, and you got to dodge them, and you got to be able to deal with it, and you got to have thick skin and be able to take constructive criticism from all angles. So, you know, once you cross that hurdle and you learn that this is the walk I have to walk, then the game becomes easy, you know, preparation becomes easy, and you tend to learn to get along with your coaches a lot better.
Yeah, how long did it take you with getting along with coaches? Because you worked with two guys who were a lot different than Andy Reid to start with, Dan Reeves and then Jim Mora.
You know, I always got along with my coaches. You know, I always felt like that respect, you know, up front was first and foremost, and then trust. And, you know, if you can cross that barrier early and communication is always open, it makes it easy. And I always respected my coaches for them even waking up in the morning and coming to work, not just because, you know, it's for their benefit and, you know, we get heavily compensated, but, you know, it still takes maximum effort to find success. And you know, any coach that put a ton of effort into me, I wanted to reciprocate that and give it back. And that's what I always try to do. So, you know, I learned to bond with my coaches and, you know, try to meet them in the middle. And that's why I always had success.
Now, also earlier, you talked a little bit about Lamar Jackson, how he seems to be the player that reminds you most of yourself. What do you see exactly when you see him?
He's shifty. Any quarterback who can move a little bit, stretch the field, is going to always give the defense problems. If he can package it all up and learn to use his running ability along with his passing ability, sky's the limit. Because it's dangerous when you have a guy that's running a 4.440 at least. Doing it. So, you know, it makes the defense react quicker. It makes the defensive calls come in different.
Well, how hard, like, figuring out that line between, like, what you could get away with running in college versus what you can do in the pros, how long did it take you to figure out a balance on that?
It took a while, man, especially when you chalk up every yard that you can get. And I was a guy, you know, I wanted it all. I was greedy. I wanted every first down. I wanted every yard. I wanted to move the chains. It's all about showing the team that I was dedicated to, you know, getting us in the end zone. And my commitment was there, and I wanted them to bring that same energy. So it's hard to talk a guy to being aggressive, you know, when you come up being aggressive. You know, so I just, you know, I had that mindset, and it never left. So, you know, it can be honed. You know, you watch Russell Wilson, he does it under control. And, you know, he barely misses a game. He's never hurt, knock on wood. You know, it's great to see when a guy can put it all together. I will say, you know, Cam is getting better, and you know, but it can also take guys out as well. So you have to be physically fit to be able to endure.
What do you think about the idea of Baltimore putting Lamar at different places on the field with Joe Flacco just to get him out there?
I don't like that. I don't like that at all. You know, I've never been a big fan of it. I did it with Donovan. Did it with. You know, Chris Chandler, I think, when I was young, it just disrupts, you know, the rhythm of the game. If you do it for a play here, play there, a specific third down and first down, or, you know, you can be creative with it, you can, but not too much. You know, you don't want Flacco to get out of rhythm. You want to keep him, you know, out there, you know, executing the offense. And if there's a couple plays that Lamar's in, we can come in and help the team. Yeah, I mean, we don't mind being slashed for a while. That's cool. But at the end of the day, you know, somebody has to, you know, take, you know, 99% of the snaps during the game.
Well, had you played any position other than quarterback?
When I was younger, I played running back for 2 years. And then, you know, one guy didn't show up 1 year. And, you know, our team consisted of 13 players. And that 13th guy was, like, really, really, really small. We had no quarterback. And I looked at, you know, I looked at the entire team and said, if we're going to have success, I got to play quarterback. And, you know, I sacrificed that year at the age of 11 years old and never looked back. But I was a running back before.
Now, did you have, like when you were going into college, did you have to fight to be in a place where they would allow you to play quarterback? Because if I'm not mistaken, East Carolina wanted you to play wide receiver.
No. Every team that recruited me wanted me to play quarterback. Syracuse wanted me to play quarterback. Clemson wanted me to play quarterback. Georgia Tech, no, they wanted me to play quarterback. Ralph Friedrich was there. I was going to come up behind Joe Hamilton. East Carolina wanted me to play quarterback. So I was locked in. I was locked in. And my high school coach made it clear that there's no change in positions with this guy, even though I could have done it.
So what did you think, though, with Lamar Jackson, all the questions that came around about him? Because that's so much of the story is the fight that he and his mother had to put forth to make sure he played quarterback.
Yeah, I don't know where that came from. You know, we don't even know if those speculations was true. You know, if there really was an NFL scout or executive saying this guy should be a receiver. I know I heard, you know, various guys on TV get up there and say it, but I think sometimes we kind of piggyback off what we're hearing. And it could have just been an allegation made on Instagram somebody made. You know, so I paid little attention to it. I always knew he would be a quarterback. And in various interviews, I said it would be a waste of talent to put Lamar Jackson, you know, as wide receiver. Even if you drafted him in the sixth round and used him as a project, you know, or a developmental guy, you know, that's still better than drafting him as a receiver. So, you know, I couldn't see that happening, and I told Lamar before the draft that, you know, he would be taken in the first round.
Now, this is something I don't think a lot of people realize. You had an opportunity to play baseball.
Yeah, I did.
Now, what was that?
When I was young, I was really, really good. I want to say 2000, I got drafted by the Colorado Rockies, and then when I played, 8 through 12, Little League baseball, really good, played center field, stole a lot of bases. Was hitting, you know, batting at about, you know, 280. I had baseball skill. Football demanded so much of my time. It was no going to baseball. There's no way I could play baseball.
You ever wonder what would have happened if you'd gone that direction? Because if nothing else, baseball is easy on your body.
Nah, I think I was designed to be what I was and what people seen. You know, it would have been a shame for the world not to be able to experience, you know, what I was able to provide on the football field. You know, as far as the highlights, you know, that we can watch over and over and over again. It was meant to be. And I'll just leave it at that.
All right, guys, you've seen me. You know me. I am one of the 66% of men who lose their hair by age 35. The thing is, by the time I noticed that, it was too late. You can keep the hair you have. That's easier than trying to replace the hair that you've lost. Your hairline doing that moonwalk, you got bald spots. How you feel a year from now if it's still going the same? So I'm going to ask you, do you want your hairline to recede or do you want to do something about it first? Don't turn to weird solutions. You can turn to medicine and science. Go to forhims.com, a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and other wellness supplements for men. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. Now, what Hims is going to do is connect you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat your hair loss. You get well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions that'll help you keep your hair. It's not the weird stuff that you get at the gas station. You don't have to have an awkward doctor's visit. You can save hours by going to ForHims.com. Answer a few quick questions. The doctor will review and prescribe you, and the product is sent directly to your door. My listeners get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today while supplies last. See website for full details. This will cost you hundreds if you went to a pharmacy. Go to ForHims.com/Bomani. 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 Now, I want to ask you about Atlanta. Well, Atlanta, the television show, I think, is one thing Gabe definitely wanted to ask about. Like, has anybody in real life challenged you to race outside of a club?
Man, I get challenged to race all the time. And, I mean, if I had time to stretch, if I wouldn't look so silly stretching and you know, outside of a McDonald's parking lot when somebody, you know, challenging me to a race, if I wouldn't look so crazy stretching to get prepared for the race, then I probably would give somebody a shot. But in the end, man, you know, I it's all fun. I love when people challenge me to races because everyone thinks they're fast, and that's a problem. Everyone thinks they're fast.
I just can't imagine, though, even if you, like, I feel like if you're as fast as Michael Vick, you wouldn't be working wherever it is that you work.
Yeah, that's my point. Everyone thinks they're so fast. So if that was the case, then you would be somewhere playing wide receiver for someone, or a defensive back, or in a totally different arena where speed is required, not challenging me to race you. You know, in front of a CVS, you know, that's just how it's going down these days. But that's the, that's what I created, so it's really cool.
I just can't imagine the fact, if all the things I could do in the CVS parking lot, I can get outrun by Michael Vick. Because as much as you say you need to stretch, so do they.
Yeah, they do too. But I tell you what, if somebody, you know, pull up on me again, man, and they pull their money out, I just might have to take it, and I'm gonna make sure that someone record it so it can go viral, you know, so people learn to leave me alone.
So what would you say, though, in 2018, how would you describe, like, your feelings and your relationship with the city of Atlanta?
I think it's awesome. I had a chance to go back playing a flag football game last week, and we had a packed house, man. The tickets sold out. Everyone showed up. I think probably because what, you know, the Flag League has been able to accomplish, and what I've been able to accomplish in Atlanta, you know, combined for a great crowd. And, you know, people came out to show support. You know, I feel like Atlanta is my second home. And, you know, I have so many relationships with people there and met so many people over the years that, you know, it's hard for that to go away. You know, when you genuinely have love for someone or for the fans or the people in the city, there's nothing they can't do, you know, wrong in my eyes. And, you know, hopefully, you know, it's vice versa on the other side. And, you know, I want to pay my respects. I want my foundation to be up and running in the next, you know, 5 or 6 months and really giving back to the city of Atlanta.
Did it take a while for you to get back to a place where the love for the city could shine through past everything that had happened?
No, it didn't. You know, I understand the mixed emotions, but I think people also understand that things do happen. And, you know, sometimes, you know, people have skeletons in their closet. No control over it, you know, no place to go, no one to talk to. You know, we're all human. And, you know, I was human just like everyone else. And, you know, we just had a hiccup and we was able to get through it and keep moving forward. And, you know, that's the way it's supposed to be. You know, they forgave me, and I appreciate that.
Do you think the team will ever retire number 7?
I don't know. They should. You know, accomplished a lot, man. Did some great things. And, you know, I tell you what, my greatest accomplishment in Atlanta, man, you know, other than having, you know, us go to an NFC championship game and compete. And that was, you know, the success that I brought at the time. You know, and being a part of, you know, a great organization with great administration and great teammates. And me rushing for that 1,000 yards was special. And, you know, to be able to do that in Atlanta Falcons uniform, place where I started, place where I got drafted, you know, the first to accomplish that record in the way I was able to do it. And, you know, the city of Atlanta being able to witness that was like we did it together, man. And there was one goal that I was pushing for other than the Super Bowl. It was to get that. And I knew that record was standing alone for a long time. And here we are, you know, 15 years later, you know, and the record still stands. So I won't say it'll stand for long, but, you know, it was one of my greatest memories.
Well, I would say, I think maybe as someone who grew up rooting for that team, the greatest accomplishment was making the Falcons matter. Like, it was hard to explain to people before then. It was just like you rooted for a team that played football. Since then, I think they basically sold every ticket in the house every game since then in 2002. So, like, when you got there and that started going, did you feel that building excitement? Like, whoa, this is something that really hasn't happened here before.
Yeah, I felt that, especially after my rookie year where we might have had, you know, 30,000 in the stands, if that, every home game. I have to give a ton of credit to Mr. Blank, to Arthur Blank. He was behind it. He masterminded it. He got the fans to come out. I think we all, you know, felt like we had something special. And me as a quarterback, I felt that way. Arthur felt that way. The city felt that way. And we all came together in support to make, you know, football, you know, kind of rise up again. You know, no pun, but yeah, I mean, we did it. And you know, it was awesome. It was awesome. It was a great feeling, man. It was great to see so many people in the stands filled up, and we didn't even go to the playoffs the year before. It was just excitement built around the team and the players. And, you know, Arthur Blank, you know, it was just him being genius again.
And 2001 through 2006 was a hell of a time to be in Atlanta.
Yes, it was. You know, I think we all enjoyed it. It was entertainment at its finest. And, you know, it's still great to be there now. You go back to, you know, the stadium and the new stadium, Mercedes-Benz, and even before then, the Georgia Dome, still rock. You know, I love to see that. And it's great to be in that environment. I love when I go back. You know, I'm glad that I'm able to, you know, sit on the sidelines now and watch and root. But it's a great feeling.
Now, when we start talking about the Falcons in this year, the big thing that's coming up with a lot of people is Julio Jones and his contract situation. What do you think about what's going on with that?
Well, I think that's just things that happen in football. You know, guys want to secure themselves. And, you know, you start to feel like, you know, all the things that you've accomplished over the course of your career, you want to be compensated for it, and you want to, you know, leave the legacy with one team. You want to be there. You don't want to be traded. You want to have some security. And I think that's probably what Julio is going through. He's getting a little older. And, you know, but that's for the Atlanta Falcons organization to determine. You know, they have to evaluate Julio and see what they see. And, you know, it'll be a ton of back and forth. And they have to watch film and make sure that he's still a guy who, you know, they can depend on. Drafted a young guy. And Julio has to understand that part of it, too. You know, at the end of the day, it's going to always be a business. And, you know, Julio's a businessman and you know, you know, obviously, Arthur Blank's a businessman, and, you know, you do business. So, you know, you have to do it the right way. So they'll find the happy medium, and I look forward to the day he gets his contract.
Well, just how important is he to that offense? Because we see the numbers that he puts up. There's the weird quirk where he doesn't necessarily put up touchdowns. But, like, without him, what does that offense become?
Who knows, man? We never seen the Atlanta Falcons without Julio Jones for us. A significant amount of time. So, you know, I think he's a key piece, whether he's on the field or not, whether he's out there as a decoy or the ball is coming to him, he's a valuable piece to that offense. And, you know, I'm just pretty sure if you talk to Matt, he'll tell you the same exact thing that I just said. So, you know, the most important thing is for him to be on that field healthy and happy at the start of the 2018 season.
All right, now we've got the final Thursday night for the AFFL. We've got Team Godspeed, Seneca Wallace, Jabba Best, Jason Avant, Jacoby Jones, Charles James, those guys. But this other team, though, what do you think about the Fighting Cancer team? Because they don't have too many names that we recognize.
If you won't recognize any of the names, but you will recognize their track record. I don't think this team has lost in the last 5 years. If I'm not mistaken, they lost one game in the last 5 years, and these guys really know how to play. So they're going to bring their best this weekend. I'm looking forward to being there. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be a great week.
All right. Now, once again, we've got the NFL Network is going to be showing the game. Check that out at 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 p.m. Central. The gates open at 6 o'clock Central. You can get your tickets at AFFL.com if you want to go check the game out in Houston. That is Michael Vick. My man, thank you so much for joining us, man. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
No problem, man. And also, that game is a $1 million winner-take-all championship game, the America Bracket versus the Pro Bracket. It's Team Godspeed versus Team Fighting Cancer. Check that one out. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. Thanks to my man, Gabe Bassane. He handles everything behind the scenes. And for Hims, remember, check us out at the Apple Podcast, at the iTunes Store, anywhere you get the podcast. Rate us, review us. We like 5 stars, and we will talk to you guys again on Tuesday. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.